This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's podcast is brought to you by the Great American Magic Company.com, an online magic store where you should go to purchase your products. Whether it's a physical product or an automatic download, be sure and check out thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com. And speaking of shopping, you can help support the MagicWordPodcast.com by making your Amazon.com purchases through the link that is provided here on the podcast. If you'll go to our blog at themagicwordpodcast.com and go over to the Amazon affiliate store, there'll be a link there where you can click and then you will go directly to your Amazon account. If you have a Premier account, or even if you don't, that you can still purchase and your account will open automatically if you're already signed in. And any purchase that you make, that a contribution is made by Amazon to the Magic Word Podcast. And we thank you very much for that. And for that matter, if you're wanting to make an additional donation of any type or of any size from $1 on up, whether it's going to be a one-time donation or if it's going to be an ongoing monthly pledge, then please join the Friends of the Magic Word. They're again at the blog at themagicwordpodcast.com. There's a place where you can become a friend of the Magic Word. And you can learn all about how that you can help support us and keep this podcast free for the world to enjoy. And be sure to follow us on facebook.com/themagicwordpodcast and on Twitter at magicwordpod and Instagram at scottwellsmagic. There are different ways that you can keep up with us and share the magic, and for that matter, you can spread the word if you just help to tell others about the Magic Word Podcast. And be sure to subscribe on not only your iTunes, if you are an Android user, there's a way of doing that as well. If you go over again to the magicwordpodcast.com website, there is a place there where you can subscribe, and you can do that very easily and never miss another podcast. You know, I get my ideas for these podcasts from the most varied sources. Of course, a lot of times these are magicians who are friends of mine that we just happen to be together at some location. Perhaps they may have come through Houston, perhaps on a lecture tour, or I see them at a show. I might be traveling someplace and run into them. Obviously, at magic conventions, there are a lot of magicians there, give me an opportunity to sit and chat with a lot of guys, and I record these podcasts then for later broadcast. Or if I'm working someplace like at the Magic Castle or elsewhere, then I have an opportunity to chat with magicians there as well. But also, I get some ideas that I think are important to the magic fraternity. Let me restate that. It's a magic community and not a fraternity, because I want to include ladies as well. I don't want it to think that just because it's not a fraternity of old boys, this is something that is a magic community. So let me just restate that in saying that as I talk with people within the magic community, I think that there are some things that are important that are newsworthy. For an example, I recently had a podcast that featured Dorothy Dietrich and Dick Brooks and talking about the Houdiniopoly. It's a Kickstarter campaign that they have had going on to raise money to make this board game, which was pretty cool. Well, there is also a regular email that is sent out by Mel Kent called Magician's Life. It's their web notes that he goes out on the internet and finds these stories that have to do with magicians, and then he sends them out in an email blast. And so I say they're regular, they're kind of irregular. They may come a couple times a week or maybe once a week or more frequently. It depends upon how often that these stories are published. Well, a recent story that came across my email inbox was a story from Mel that talked about Mike Siegel and his Sorcerer Safari, which is a magic camp up in Canada. The story was talking about how he is ending the 20-year run that they have had of this magic camp up in Canada. And so I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk with Mike about the evolution, how it got started, and how it continued to develop some of the camp counselors and that kind of a thing. And moreover, to talk about how perhaps this can be replicated by other people. Now, I know there are other kinds of magic camps that are out there. Most notably, of course, there's Tannen's Magic Camp. Here in Texas, we have Austin has a summer magic camp. Some of these camps are day camps where the parents may drop off the kids during a day and they pick them up at night. There are others where they actually go out into the woods and they have camp counselors and they're there for the week or some period of time. So there are different kinds of camps. The Sorcerer Safari is one of the latter. That is, it's one that was in the woods and the kids would be bused to it, or the parents would drop them off and there would be camp counselors. Plenty of activities, and not just magic, but also there was boating and swimming and lots of other kinds of camping activities that the kids get to do. So, again, I thought it was interesting, not only from a historical perspective, but also in case someone wanted to consider replicating a similar kind of experience. That is, that if you have a location in your nearby area you think might be advantageous for opening up a magic camp, this might give you the inspiration and some of the information that you need in order to go and do likewise. So if you need more information, you can always talk to Mike Siegel. And also, I've known Mike for a long number of years. I work with him through the International Brotherhood of Magicians on the International Board, where he has served in working on the youth committee, and is just a fantastic fella. I've always gotten a lot out of our conversations every time we have a chance to sit down and chat. Very interesting gentleman, very much committed to making sure that the future of magic is in good hands. And so by preparing them at his magic camp, certainly that we can feel assured that we will be having another generation of good magicians, thanks to his organization and the tutelage of all of the counselors who have helped over the years. And so in this podcast, you'll get to hear all of that and quite a bit more than as well. So this week, we're going to again turn this over to Mike Siegel, talking about Sorcerer Safari, here on The Magic Word. Hello, this is Scott Wells with TheMagicWordPodcast.com, and it gives me great pleasure to talk with someone today, Mr. Mike Siegel, who is in charge of the Sorcerer Safari up in Canada. Hi there, Mike.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoy being had. I certainly do. So I'm glad that... Sorry, I got to say that. Sure. So I wanted just to talk with you about the kinds of programs that you've been working with the youth for a long time. I know, like in talking with you before, like when we met at the IBM convention and worked together on committees and things, that you've been in charge of the youth. And so I assume this has been something that's been a passion of yours, of helping to teach magic to youth since you were probably a kid.
Yeah, well, it's a passion of mine because when I was a kid and very, very much into magic, it was, you know, a different time, but it was very, very difficult to come across mentors, you know, to learn magic correctly. I didn't come up in the time of videos or internet for that matter. So most of my magic was book learning. And it gave me a little bit of creative freedom in that reading a book, you don't end up mimicking exactly what you see.
Right.
And then the camp was started 20 years ago because I had noticed a shift in how youth were learning magic. And, you know, and again, as I say, it was something that I had always wanted when I was younger. And I finally sort of had the means to be able to offer it, and the camp came of that.
Well, you're right. Going back to the way that people learn, particularly depending upon where you are. If you happen to be in a major metropolitan area, a lot of times there may be a club nearby or someone who could provide mentorship to you, or a magic shop. It used to be, at least when we were kids, that there were brick and mortar shops. But now they've got online ways of learning, of course, which is great as well. I have my granddaughter learned some magic, not just from me, but actually going on YouTube and watching some things, and she was showing me things she's learned from the YouTube. So there are different ways that that people have to learn now. But so you said that when you were growing up, as with me, and learning more from books, and I feel like that by having learned that way, you're absolutely right. You're not being a clone of the person who was your mentor, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Or, not even so much of the mentor, but of the video clip, you know, that you saw. And I found that was becoming more prevalent. I think a good mentor will sort of break you of that.
Good point.
You know, please don't copy me. Make sure you make it your own.
Right.
And you know, I grew up in a fairly metropolitan area, Toronto. We've got a couple of million people here and a couple magic clubs. Mm-hmm. But I found the real working guys didn't really have the time to mentor me. And the older guys, or the ones with the time, were not really my pick of being taught. If you follow what I mean. So,
yes.
So, you know, if you are lucky enough to have a club, by all means, take advantage of it. Join the clubs. And I know, you know, I have this argument with a lot of the youth, but join the Magic Club. You know what? It's $30. Just pay that. Mm-hmm. Go to one or two meetings, but it's a lot of networking. It's not so much about, this is going to sound funny, but about what the club can offer you, but more about what you can offer the club. And mm-hmm. I think by joining a club, you know, you'll get a lot more than just learning new magic. There's a lot more to a club than just learning tricks.
That's true. It's the presentation and a lot of the suggestions that your club members are going to be giving you will not just be good feedback on how to hold your hand or maybe if you do this slide instead of that or you use this line or that, but also as to choreography, as to blocking, as to your gestures, to your direction. You know, a lot of the psychological aspects that someone can give you that you're not going to be getting that feedback necessarily if you are just trying to learn it on your own or watching YouTube or something and you don't have somebody who is actually helping you with making an entertaining routine.
Exactly. 100%. And so that was really the big point of camp. I mean, it ended up becoming, you know, just like a wonderful get together, but the original starting point, the reason we got amazing instructors like Sean Farquhar, Greg Fruin, and Shoma, and those are just the FISM winners, was because they believed that, you know, that magic should be taught a little differently than the way it's been, you know, just more personally. Not so much differently, but just more personally, I think, is really what it was about. So that, you know, somebody's not watching a video. They really are getting personal instruction on their presentation, on their, you know, skills or lack thereof or things they can use, you know, instead of this thing, you know, this one force that they learned on YouTube, maybe, you know, there's five or six other forces that will be a little more appropriate that they're not aware of, that kind of thing. So it's really tailored to the individual.
Yeah, and I did want to talk a little bit about, you mentioned just three of the fellows who were instructors there as well. And, of course, one of the reasons I wanted to talk with you on this podcast is that, unfortunately, you've had to wrap up after 20 years, and so you're no longer carrying on. I guess last season was the last season.
Sadly, yeah. However, just to put it out there, I don't know if it's completely, like, done or not. But certainly, if or when it comes back, it will be different.
Yeah.
It'll be changed. And there will not be a proper Sorcerer Safari this summer. It's summer of 2017.
And it was only during the summertime that you had it there in Toronto. Is that right?
Yes. Well, for about – so it's 20 years old.
Yeah.
We did it for about 5 years. And then we started a March break camp. And that ran for about 5 years. Our summer camp would have anywhere from, at our high, 160 kids, and our lowest was 90. But the March break would always be about 20 kids. So we found that wasn't really worthwhile. So we stopped it after 5 years.
Now, when you say a camp, I always think of something like when I went to Boy Scout camp, of something that would be an overnight camp and the parents would drop you off and come back a week later or something. Or was this a day camp or what?
No. This was a real, real camp. So I never had, when I was coming up again, there was Tannins, but it wasn't really talked about so much. It wasn't quite as popular. However, I really wanted to do that. I since found out, actually, since starting my camp, that Tannins wasn't really a camp. It was run on a school campus, a university dorm. And so it was more like a summer magic school.
Mm-hmm.
David Goodsell had one on the West Coast at that point called West Coast Wizards. It was just wrapping up. But that was a little more like a camp. So ours is a full-on camp. And I think that's why we had our staff come back.
Out in the woods and everything, I mean, kind of a thing.
Out in the woods. We rented up in Haliburton, Ontario, which is like a sort of a go-to spot even for, you know, Hollywood people when they come in for a vacation, that kind of thing. They're generally up in the Muskokas, up in Haliburton. So it's a really picturesque little town. Not that we get to see the town at all. We being myself and all the kids. The staff kind of come and go over the week, but myself and the kids, we never leave the grounds. Like we arrive there. I arrive there the night before. The kids get there the next morning, and we don't leave until that last bus goes with the last camper. So although as beautiful as it is, you know, outside the campgrounds, really nobody gets to see that. Mm-hmm. But the campgrounds themselves were beautiful. We had beautiful lake, beautiful swimming area. We had an incredible theater. We had Stephen Klein is on our staff. I don't know whether to talk in past tense or current tense in terms of
switch back and forth a little bit over there now. Well, you know, I want to know, was this a camp that actually existed and then kind of fell in disrepair, or somebody was going to sell, or were they renting it? I mean, it sounds the thing was already there.
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah. Camp White Pine is a pretty famous camp. In fact, it's the camp they filmed the movie Meatballs at.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so when Meatballs was filmed, that was filmed at Camp White Pine. They built a special cabin, obviously, for the interior scenes. But the actual grounds and everything is exactly what you see in the movie. You know, the mess hall is exactly from the movie. The big, the mess hall, there was a big sort of, a few little common areas. There's what they call the old theater. And so in the movie, that's their theater. They since built a new one. Oh, and that's what I was saying. As I was saying, Steve Klein would come in and bring this production equipment. And honestly, in the middle of the forest, we would have a better soft seat theater than many I've played in cities.
Wow.
You know, just with the lighting, the sound, the way it was set up.
Sure.
And the other thing I found that was really good, again, for us as adults. Now, the joke was always, you know, as far as the campers are concerned, I could run a magic camp out of my garage. Mm-hmm. Because they don't care. They don't care about swimming. They don't care about the nature. They don't really care all that much about the camp aspect of it. They're just thrilled to be meeting these you know, amazing magicians.
Sure.
But the amazing magicians, they care. And they want, you know, a beautiful waterfront. They want to be able to go canoeing and swimming and sailing and rock climbing and all that stuff. So that's what the camp was. At the camp I worked at as a kid, I was their head of drama for a year. I was a counselor for a year. And I always thought it would just be such a wonderful combination. And so that's how the camp sort of came about. And then obviously my vision of it changed every year as we got more people, not only more campers, but more staff specifically, that would make suggestions. Hey, have you thought of doing this? We should do that. And so the camp was constantly evolving. Every summer we would, you know, get rid of one thing that maybe wasn't working as well and introduce a new thing to see, you know, how that goes. And honestly, I couldn't have been happier with how it all turned out.
Now, I would think that there would be a lot of kids who would return from year to year, or obviously would have different skill levels. And so I assume that you put them into different classes depending upon where they were. And did they have to go through some sort of process to determine, okay, well, show me what you got. I mean, you may say that you're at a certain level, but you actually should be placed here or there. How did that work?
That's exactly true, because oftentimes a parent is filling out the camper application, and a parent assumed if their kid fooled them with a card trick, their kid is an expert at cards.
Of course.
And so that was always funny. But over the years, we sort of figure that out. So everybody signs up, and they do sign up for what they feel their skill level is. But on the first day after the buses arrive, everybody goes to their class, and each, instead of the magician, so let's say it's Lee Asher teaching his card class. On that first day, he would have, let's say, 8 campers in the class. All 8 campers would do a card trick. That was the first day. That's all they did. And then Lee would come to us afterwards and say, you know what? This guy should be moved up, or that guy should be moved down. And we do it. And it's not like a beginner, intermediate, or advanced. It was more like card class 1 or 2 or 3. So nobody really knew. You know, so if the kids had to go from class, 5 to class 8, they didn't realize whether they were moving up or moving back in terms of skill level.
That makes sense.
But for them, they would end up in a class where they're not going to be intimidated. That was the other thing. These kids would, sign up for a class, and then they'd just be so overwhelmed with, the skill level of the other campers that they wouldn't get anything from it. So that wasn't fair. So we do that on the very first day they come in, and that's for card class, because we do a card class every day, and it progresses based on your skill level. Whereas some of the other stuff we do, things like we do an illusion workshop or a marketing thing, it doesn't really matter what your skill level is, because that's more like an introduction.
Okay.
So the only two areas where a real skill level was kind of sort of predetermined and required would be our card classes and our coin classes for the close-up. Because then, as I say, we did something called electives. So although we would have the card class and the coin class every day, they would also have the chance for an elective every day. And an elective, depending on who our guest was, could mean anything from close-up magic to stage illusions to production. So again, let's say a guy like Greg Fruin comes in, and he's there for the day. Rather than make him teach a class on cups and balls or something, because that's our curriculum, he would say, I'm going to do a class on doves. That's his specialty. And sure. So he would offer that day as the elective. And whoever wanted to, regardless of skill level, because they're not actually going to have doves in their hand. They're not, it's not as hands-on as cards or coins. They can sign up for the class and understand what it's like to own doves and take care of them and do
not that just the production of them, but how to work with them, but also how to care for them.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Greg is definitely one of those guys. The doves are not props. They're, sure. They're part Friends. Of his stage yeah. family. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So we would have that. That would be, another thing every day. So there would be the card class, the coin class, the elective that they signed up for, obviously breakfast, lunch, and dinner, a swim period, an outdoor activity period, and then we would have one more period in the day, and that was called a performance workshop. And that's when the camp would get divided into, a few groups, and they would all go to an area and stand up and perform something. They could tell a joke, they could play a song, or they could do a magic trick. It doesn't matter what they do, but they get up in front of the rest of the group and present something. Because that was the other thing that we found, is so many of these guys, had these great skills, but they couldn't present.
Right. No stage presence. Or they had stage fright.
Or stage fright, or, a lot of humming and awing and, staring down at their hands or shuffling on stage, not making eye contact, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, really, the way camp ended up progressing, I thought that was probably the most valuable class we did in a day at camp, because every camper went home with something they could present.
Well, and also the main thing they go home with is self-confidence, because they probably, I'm sure when they went home, that their parents noticed that, wow, they're much more presentable, and they talk with our friends and adults and other people that they maybe were more shy before. I'm sure you get those kind of comments too.
Oh, 100%. Yep, yep. And I think it's great. One of the things we also noticed is that, if you're coming from a high school, chances are you're the magic kid at that high school.
Yeah.
So you're known as the kid that does magic. Nobody really questions that. And that gives you a little bit of confidence, and sure, you're that magic guy. However, you get up to magic camp and you've got 10 other magic guys just in your cabin. So now you have to be somebody other than the magic guy. You could be the funny magic guy, the serious magic guy. You could just be, Bob, the guy. You doesn't have to be the magic element, but you can't just fall back on I do magic, because now you see there's 100 other people that do magic. You've got to now step it up a little bit.
Exactly. My older son, Sean, had gone to a Western State College for his freshman year, and he was the captain of the football team in high school. And so he wanted to play ball and did when he went to Colorado. But once he got there, he realized that all the other kids who were playing football with him had been captains also. So, might have been a big fish in a small pond, but when you get up to the big leagues again in college ball, it's completely different. And so suddenly it's like, well, okay, so I was captain too. Big deal, So here, I'm sure that this kind of is a different kind of an attitude that that they get from the rest of the other campers who are similar to them and have and also do magic, but now you're being recognized just for what you're doing because you're all the same, I guess, at this point.
Exactly. And I think, your son, for example, in college, I think that's a bigger wake-up call than when you're like 12 or 13, 14, and at least you can get ready for it.
Yeah. What did you have as an age group then, as far as from what to what?
Campers, we had 10. Our target was 10 to 20. But because the camp is now 20 years old, we ended up, my kid loves magic. So we went as young as 8 sometimes, if they had, experienced being on their own and everything. So we would have a younger cabin, and that would generally be like 8 to 11. But then we had also magicians, campers that were 20. Now, when they're 21, they get the opportunity to come to camp for free if they want to be a counselor. Mm-hmm. And a counselor basically just takes care of the cabin. So they don't have to teach magic. They don't have to do any of that. They just have to make sure their cabin of 8 to 10 gets to, the feeder on time, gets to the swimming on time, that kind of thing.
Right, okay.
But a lot of them don't want to do that. So they're, so now we have 21, 22, 23 that are like, well, we want to come to camp, but we don't want to be a counselor. So we ended up with an adult cabin of 20 to 25, basically 25, 26. So that was our oldest cabin. They did not have a counselor. Mm-hmm. We just sort of gave them an area sort of up in the forest, a nice cabin with a washroom in it, and just let them do their thing. So it was kind of like a giant, a tiny magic convention up in the forest for them.
But whenever that these guys were taking the classes, also you say like in the morning they would have a card and then a coin, then they have the elective classes that they could take.
Yeah.
It didn't matter whether they were 8 years old or 18 years old, I assume. Or did you throw them all together or keep them separated by age as well as skill?
No. So skill, yeah. So skill regardless of age. So if we had, a 20-year-old that was a stage illusionist just beginning with cards, and we had a 12-year-old that was like a whiz with cards, they may be in the same card class.
Okay.
But for the most part, we were, again, fortunate enough that the card classes, the maximum in a card class would be 8. 8, to 10, let's say 10, just to make it easier. Mm-hmm. We would try and keep those, so if we had 3 beginner card classes and one were younger kids, sort of medium kids and the older kids. So we would divide them sort of like that. So they would usually be in and amongst their own age, for many of the classes. But then for the full camp activities, obviously they're going to be there with all the younger guys. And for anything like an elective, they would be with the younger guys, because maybe a young guy wants to go see Sean Farquhar talk about competition acts, And so Sean, for his elective, would have access to the entire camp for that. But for the card class, for their day-to-day things, they're generally in their own age groups.
Okay. And when you were developing this then to begin with, did you you started planning the whole thing, was your original plan to have this as a camp, or did you think of it as a day camp, or did you have something that you experimented with that eventually led into this overnight week-long camp?
Well, my vision was always to have sort of a week-long camp. And the reason is, again, because...
Where the kids are isolated, so that way they're focused just on magic 24-7.
Exactly, but, yeah. But, you know, Scott, it's not the kids that we have to isolate. It's the adults.
Really?
And so, yeah, I mean, if you've been to conventions, and, you know, I won't get into it, but, yeah. I mean, you know, there's guys that show up at a convention, they sure. do their scheduled lecture, and then you can't find them. They're not in the dealer room, they're in their hotel room, or they're gone.
Yeah,
and there's not really hangout time because there's so many distractions and things going. Well, up at the camp, there's only one sort of area with Wi-Fi. None of the kids really get it, but, you know, all the staff, obviously, they're all professional working. They, you know, come and check their Wi-Fi once or twice a day. But that's it.
Yeah.
All the other time, they can't really stay in their cabin because the cabins are tiny. There's nothing in them. So they're just accessible. So, you know, we'll have a swim period and somebody will walk up to, you know, Johnny Ace Palmer during swim and say, hey, show me this, you know, the coin roll. And he'll sit on the beach and he'll pull out a coin and teach them that. And so they get access to all these people that they would not normally have had access to. They might see them at a magic convention, but, I mean, you're aware kids are, you know, they're shy.
Sure,
if it's their first magic convention, they're not going to walk up to a pro and, you know, and really, really get some feedback.
Right.
And, you know, and the pro at the same time, he's there to do his job and, you know, to shake 1,000 hands and sell lecture notes, and he's got other things to do. Camp sort of stripped everything away. So it was just people who love magic, who love, you know, each other, and it really was. And I know that sounds very kumbaya-ish, but camp, we really did become a family. And we've got campers, you asked about the return rate. We were in the high 90% return rate. So, you know, except for kids sort of, you know, getting older, getting married, getting out of magic, they would still come. In fact, we had some campers that continued to come, even though they didn't do magic anymore. They still liked it, but they loved camp. They still came for the 1 week.
Just the experience.
To see their friends. Yeah. To do that. And again, my when I started it, you know, I got a lot of flack because am I exposing magic? Who am I exposing magic to? And that kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing it the right way. I mean, it seems to me that if you're going to be teaching magic, you're not exposing magic. People are coming because that they have a genuine interest in it, and you need to go someplace. There's nothing better than this. I would that'd be the last thing I would have thought.
Yeah, Scott, you're preaching to the choir. I completely agree with you. But, you know, there were guys that you know, hey, why are you teaching these kids? These kids are just going to take, you know, take away our birthday party shows. They're going to end up, you know, taking away other gigs as well.
Wow.
And, you know, you're going to work us out of the market. And and there was a lot of that. There really was. And my argument was that I'm not trying to make a new generation of magicians. Honestly, what I was trying to do was make a generation that would buy tickets to a magic show. That would understand that a magic show is a performance art just like any other. And it's not just, you know, is this your card? There's so much more to it. I just thought, you know what, if I can just enhance the public's appreciation of magic so that they understand, you know, there's a real skill behind this stuff. That's what I was trying to do. I was really just trying to legitimize, you know, magic more so as a performance art than a skill set.
Sure, I understand. I taught a magic class for about 3.5 years at two different colleges and had, I don't know, 1,000 people come through during that time that I taught. And my goal there, just like with this podcast, is that I am hoping that magicians will become better equipped and better performers, because that ultimately, I think, will help me. Because in other words, that when people see a good magician, they'll want to hire another magician again. If you see a poor performance, then you're going to say that, well, gosh, we had a magician last time, we don't want one again. And so by having a good magician and seeing a good performance, then they're they're going to hire another magician, and that just might be me the next time, because they might say, well, we want to have somebody different. What else have you got? So there's ultimately a self-serving goal that I have kind of in mind as well. But ultimately, sure. Of course, not just with that, realistically, for just to have good performances worldwide by people, the more you know, the better you're going to be, you know.
Exactly.
We'll get right back to Mike Siegel and continue talking about the Sorcerer Safari in just a moment, but I want to introduce you again to Eric Citron, the proprietor of the GreatAmericanMagicCompany.com. Hi there, Eric.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I've had just a great week, and I know we've got some new magic that has come out this week as well as some old stuff, and I just wanted to talk with you about what is it that's the latest that you've got for sale?
Well, it's not even released as of yet, but it's a new trick by Angelo Carbone. For those of us in the magic world, he's a genius. Does a lot of stuff for Tenyo, and it's called the gift. It's basically a little gift box, like 2 inches by 2 inches, maybe a little bigger, 3 inches by 3 inches, with a lid, and you show it empty, and you can produce up to 4 different predictions from it, and it's absolutely ingenious. Once you know the secret, you'll have fun just playing with it by yourself, but it's brilliant, and it retails. There's 2 versions. There's a limited edition gold version that's $99, and a regular standard black edition, which comes out at $75, and they'll both be available February 13th.
And again, that's called The Gift, is that right?
The Gift Black and The Gift Gold.
Got it. Okay, and you can probably start taking orders, I guess, then right now for shipping after it gets released then next week.
Yeah, and we bought a bunch of them because I know they're going to be sold out pretty quickly. It comes with a deck of cards. It comes with a 40-minute instructional video from Angelo Carbone himself. It's really incredible once you see how it's done. I mean, it's a lot of fun to play with, it looks like.
Now, that's one of the new things that's coming out, but what have you got that's old? Because I know that you're always looking for good used magic.
Absolutely. We just got our hands on a mint condition Collector's Workshop Kyra Cobra, which comes with a year warranty from Collector's Workshop. And those of you that know their work, you know it's state-of-the-art. They don't make it anymore. This one is in pristine condition, comes with a travel case and everything you need to use it. And as I said, it comes with a year warranty. We also have coming in Chance Wolf's The Flea Circus, which is he considers it his masterpiece. It's a remote control flea circus, comes in its own ATA case. He only made 31 of them, as far to my knowledge. When they came out, they were $3,200. We were able to locate one of them. It's absolutely gorgeous. And so we have that as well. We also have a couple of Sean Begonia's pieces. We just got them in stock. The Animation Sensation, which is the Hank that's built into the suitcase, and it's a 6-minute act that's totally remote control in the suitcase. And we have his remote control sketch pad, which is basically you draw a picture on a sketch pad, you step away from it, the whole thing becomes animated. You're nowhere near it. The eyes move, the mouth moves, and then you rip off the piece of paper and you give it to the person, and there's the drawing. And as only he can make it. And we have those in stock ready to ship as of today. And so we're always on the lookout for high-quality stuff that nobody else has.
That sounds great. And you still have the $15 off special?
Yes. If you put in the code capital M, capital W in the promo box, you get $15 off anything you purchase from us.
That's $15 off for every $100, over $100.
Exactly.
Right, so $100 that you would get for $85, basically, get $15. Or if you buy $130, you get $15 off, so that's $115 there, just entering the code MW at checkout.
Yes, and we also have one other piece. Richard Gerlich is one of the premier magical inventors of our time, and he used to make a version of the Stoll watch, which is a mental prediction pocket watch.
Yeah.
We were able to locate one. It's in mint condition, comes with the gold chain and the stand. When he was selling them retail, they were $2,500. Now you can't get them anymore. We happen to have one. It's in perfect condition. It's beautiful. And we're selling it for $1,700, and it's ready to go. It's absolutely magnificent.
And all those things are on your website?
Yes, sir.
right over there at thegreatamericanmagiccompany.com. Thank you very much, Eric, for your time and for all the great information on some wonderful stuff that's available then right now from the company. So surf on over to the Great American Magic Company and take advantage of some great deals. So let's get back to our conversation with Mike Siegel.
Exactly, and that's another thing that, I heard so frequently. Well, we had a magician last year, and we don't think he's good. We don't like magic. I don't think magic works this year. We're going mm-hmm. in a different direction, and it always surprised me because really, if you have a good magician, it's going to work. It doesn't matter what the group is. It doesn't matter what the celebration or event is.
Right.
If that magician is good and knows their job, everybody will enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that magic doesn't work. It's that one magician you hired didn't work.
Right. Well, just like you've heard poor singers or, poor musicians or something. The unfortunate thing with that is if somebody says, well, we had a bad experience with musicians last year, and so we'll hire a different band this year. Well, they don't think the same thing about a magician. Whenever they see a bad magician, they think they're all alike, as opposed to there are different genres of music. They don't think there's different genres of magic, than two. So
that 100%, because people have the experience of music. They can see a lousy band and understand that's a lousy band, but they don't have that experience with magic, so
they don't have a base of comparison.
Yes, they see that one magic show, and they don't like it, and now they don't like magic.
Right.
But they didn't realize, maybe they didn't, they saw a lousy magician, and there's all kinds of different genres and things. So, so really it was a chance just to bring magic a little bit more respect and a little more exposure.
So again, from the very get-go, that you had to, your vision was to have a camp like this that was going to be an outdoor camping experience and not just a day camp kind of a thing. So how would you, and I'm just, asking this question because as you're ending, perhaps someone else might want to take this working model, because I know, for an example, in Austin, Texas, that they have been having a magic camp that Kent Cummins has done for a long number of years, and it's been extremely successful that they do each year, and they have a lot of great magicians who have come out of that area as a result of the things that they're doing there. But theirs is like a day camp, basically. So again, some others might want to pick up and do some sort of a camp. But I would think going and trying to find a camp like this, because there are other intrinsic things. You'd have to have, obviously, a cafeteria, some place they're going to be eating. And so there's a quartermaster that has to do with food, the processing of all of that, of buying the things. A lot of people don't think about the small things that are in a big camp. You just think, okay,
exactly.
Well, it's here for fun. But, you talk about the going out for the canoes. Well, you got to have the canoes and the oars and everything else, and have to have a dock and make sure it's going to work. You have to have life preservers. I assume there has to be some sort of a medic area in case
people get whatever. Yeah, you have to have the lifeguard, for sure.
Yeah, lifeguard, but maybe a doctor on site or whatever.
Absolutely, but also that people don't understand, you have to have insurance on every one of those kids. Sure. They're all under 18. Parents are sending them to you. Mm-hmm. We're not early childhood educators. We're magicians.
Right. Well, so, that was what I was going to ask. You have to have some sort of qualification as far as being vetted to say, well, this is a safe zone or something, particularly when you're working with children?
Yes. So in terms of vetting people, again, because our camp, people were coming from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And, most of them I knew, but some of them I only knew for, the week we were working on a gig together. The only thing that the full-time performers had to have was a police background check.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. And then we would have people, like we would hire lifeguards, we would hire a doctor, we would hire a couple of activity people, people that don't really care so much about the magic and care about playing with the kids, making sure the kids, use that outside stuff. And then everything else. Well, that was all supplied by the camp. We booked the camp, we would keep on their waterfront and their maintenance and their kitchen staff. That's who we kept. And then we brought in everyone else.
So they probably had, about eight people or so that were working all the maintenance and everything?
Yeah. Well, like that. This camp, in its full season, again, it's a fairly large camp. It's got about 600 campers and about 200 staff.
Oh, so yours is just a part of this larger camp. And so there are other camps going on within this forested area.
No, we were very fortunate enough, because I knew the owner and because I had done a lot of work with this camp, we rented the camp after. So there, 800 people leave on, you know, Monday, and we roll in on Tuesday.
So it's outside their season, basically.
Exactly, which is why I could never tell people exactly what our camp dates were a year in advance, because it had to do with our school system, where Labor Day fell, you know, how much time the camp was able to give us, and that kind of thing. So there's a lot that goes into it that people didn't see. And sadly, that was the part that was just wearing us down. You know, the camp was a big, big labor of love, and it became this incredible thing because of everybody involved that I couldn't be happier or prouder of. But it certainly changed, you know, from what I had envisioned. It became so much better.
Did you feel at some point that it really became more of a job than it was fun, or was it still fun at the end?
It was still fun at the end. So what happened was, I mean, I never really thought it would go 20 years. I've never done anything for 20 years, short of magic, straight up. But I haven't even been married 20 years.
Okay.
But the camp, what ended up happening was, on year 19, the camp owner came to us and said, you know what, the writing's kind of on the wall. You guys have 150 people. Our camp is large enough for 800, and we've got groups. Remember, 20 years ago, there wasn't space camp. There wasn't tennis camp. There wasn't, you know, drama camp. So, you know, so it was, there weren't as many people vying for this one little space at this one little time of year.
Mm-hmm.
And so he came to us and he said, you know, the writing's kind of on the wall. And again, we were grandfathered in. So whereas, you know, we were paying considerably less than what he'd be able to charge a new group coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So year 19, he came and said, okay, we're going to have to wrap it up. And I said, you know what? If you give us till year 20, I promise we'll walk away. It'll all be great. No hard feelings. And you know what? We did a wonderful thing. And he said, sure. And then what happened was, basically in January, so we ended end of August, we start gearing up for year 20. In January, we got a letter saying that the camp will not be available. However, we had already put some things in place. So Lee Asher, myself, and Lee's wife, my wife, we drove up north, and we found a new campground. And it is a really, really nice campground. And we did it last summer at this new campground. And it has nothing to do with the campground, because it really was nice. Everything was great. But it, because of the change, this was a passion project for me. I loved doing it. Mm-hmm. I loved everything about it. And that scramble for the camp, I also had some medical stuff going on this year. And, you know, it just became like it wouldn't be a labor of love anymore. And I wanted to stop it before that happened.
Right.
And so that's really what it was. My wife and I had we had a really long talk, a lot of tears. We didn't want to do it, but really didn't want it to become either a labor of any kind, or for it to just sort of peter out and, you know, not have that moment. So I think of the camp kind of as like a flashpoint in time in the magic community, like the magic castle when Guy Vernon was living there.
Sure.
It's
never the same afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was just this one thing, and it was so special. And I know if you talk to any of the campers, and I mean our campers, they're doing exceptionally well. We've got guys on, you know, Penn and Teller Fool Us and Masters of Illusion. They're out on full tours. And these are, you know, 20-year-olds that might not have had that opportunity. Well, for sure wouldn't have had the opportunity had it not been for, you know, coming to camp, meeting Michael Close or, you know, or any of the amazing guests we've had.
I was going to say, you mentioned a few of those just kind of intermittently, but are there some other names that you can come up with or think of who have been either guests, teachers, or full-time staff?
Sure. Well, and I'm going to forget some right now, and so I'm going to apologize in advance. But we had, just trying to think, like, highlight. Well, Johnny Ace Palmer was our very first guest. And he's also a physical winner, which was amazing. But Danny Garcia has come up a few times. Wayne Houchet and his wife, quite a few times. Steve Valentine, Michael Amar, Gregory Wilson, our regular staff. Our regular staff was Lee Asher, Aaron Fisher, Greg Fruin, Sean Farquhar. And these were guys like that were – not the special guests. These were just the guys on staff. Gosh, 20 years. I'm forgetting so many.
And when you were up there, was it just a one-week camp, or did you have week after week, and it went for like 4 or 6 weeks or something? You had a different group of kids who came in then each week, or what was
If there had been that kind of demand, I would have been able to maybe fill up that week with a few, you know, more kids, and we wouldn't have lost the camp. But sadly, no, it was just the 1 week.
1 week.
And, yeah, now everybody came voluntarily. So, you know, we're flying – it wouldn't cost them. So we'd pay for the airfare. So let's say somebody's coming in from L.A. We would pay for that airfare, but that's pretty much it. Everything else was on them. So while they were in town or while they were in Canada, because we would get them here, we would arrange, you know, a small lecture tour or at least one or two local lectures where they could sell some notes and they could,
help defray
their
costs,
get a lecture food. Exactly. Well, we also did something for one day at camp. We had a thing we called Dealer Day. And on that day, everybody, including some of the kids that have, you know, extra magic lying around, or, you know, our regular guests, like, again, I'm just going to go back to, like, Sean Farquhar, who came every summer, and he was just a regular guy, but he had product. He had Palmer Magic. So everybody would set up a table on Dealer Day, and they would have 2 hours, basically the entire camp. You know, and it was like a dealer room at a magic convention.
So the kids brought money with them, I guess.
Okay.
Because you told them in advance, I guess, that they should bring some money because there will be some things they could purchase.
That's right. Now, it was entirely up to them because a lot of these guys would bring up, for example, something like lecture notes and just give them to all the kids. There, once the kid paid, and I think it was like $900 for the week. Once the kid paid that $900, there were no other costs. They didn't, you know, no cost for food, nothing.
Right.
Everything else was sort of done. However, they could, you know, if they wanted, and certainly wasn't necessary, but they could bring up, you know, an extra $20 for Dealer Day to buy something. And
were there books that you had provided as well, as far as to? For their studies and everything? In other words,
the first couple of years, we used the Mark Wilson book.
I was about to say, Mark Wilson, Course on Magic.
Yeah. I think it's amazing. Although, so here's another guest that's come up quite a few times, Josh Shea. And then he released his book, which became, you know, another really good general magic book for young people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, with the DVD and everything with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But now, we had sort of kind of weaned off the book thing, but the first couple of years, we definitely used that book, as sort of the written thing. But again, as it kind of went on, we felt, and found that we were covering things that weren't in the books at all anymore. And so everybody just took notes. So in fact, when they registered, they would get a little package. We had amazing sponsorship. Illusionist would send us, you know, hundreds of decks of cards every summer to distribute to the kids. And so they would get, you know, their pack of cards and a close-up mat, and they would also get a pad and paper to take notes because that was pretty much it, because they would do one class with this guy and one class with that guy, you know, and they're getting notes on cards and coins and, you know, marketing. And although the general books are good, they wouldn't cover the specifics. So
at the end, you didn't have lecture notes or outlines. I mean, you just basically said, you know, take your own notes. Okay.
Now, and, you know, some were fastidious about it and others, you know, never wrote a thing.
Sure. And you also had said how that they come up by bus. So when you said that, I was thinking, yeah, it's just like a, you know, an old time type of a camp. I guess that there must have been a bus someplace in the middle of Toronto. They were supposed to congregate, and then that bus would take everybody at the same time, rather than parents dropping off the kids and going up
exactly.
there.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, there were two options, basically. So a lot of our campers were coming in from out of town, and certainly the guests. So we would have a bus that would do a pickup at a school, basically, that was right in the center of Toronto. Mm-hmm. So returning campers obviously had made friends with kids in their cabin, so they would come in a day or two early and stay with their friend, and then the parents would drop them off in the bus. But, you know, for first time or for the staff, that bus would pick up at the school, then drive to the airport and do a pickup there. And sometimes we had as many as three buses, but on average it was two buses. So one would do the school, you know, and a stop at the airport if need be, and the other would do the airport. It would do a pickup, and then at the end of the week, the very same thing. Either drop the kids off at the school and they sign in and out and parents come and get them, or they drop off at the airport and we had a liaison at the airport that would get every camper to their gate and flight, that kind of thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So with kids, there's so many, you know, there's so many unknowns and, you know, and you can't leave them. That's the thing. They don't know what to do and they don't know how to do it. So we've got to walk them through all of that.
Well, what was one of the best experiences or stories that you've heard, you know, afterwards, either by one of your graduates or parents or one of the teachers? What have been some things that you've heard?
It's so much, but not to sound, I don't know, but the one thing that I got the most was that it's changed their magic lives. You know, with some of the kids, it's changed their entire lives. They've got friends in magic. They never thought they would be a magician. They never thought they could do magic as a living. And so that's changed their lives. But for a lot of the pros that have been around magic their whole lives, this was a truly unique experience that they would come back again and again. And as I said, like, they weren't getting paid. They were, in fact, losing money, you know, closing their theater or buying their flights or bringing their family. Yeah. But it rejuvenated them. It gave them a new energy. Like, the feeling on the last day of camp, well, everybody's dead tired on the last day of camp. Let's say the day after that, once you're home and out of sleep, the rejuvenation, the excitement about being a magician, about doing some new material, or just, you know, talking, chatting online to your new friends or that kind of thing. It really charged those batteries. And that was the overwhelming thing I got from
that. Is one of the cool things, I think, and that is the camaraderie that one has, that you make some friends through that camping experience and that learning experience. They're almost like comrades in arms as they go forward into life. It's like, yeah, remember when we went to that camp, you know, when they're talking to their friends in their 60s and say, yeah, we were in camp together back when we were 18 or whatever, you know. Those are things that just last forever, those memories and skill sets that they've learned, and they want to pass it on to others. You know, do you find, you mentioned that some of the students who have come through have decided that they really weren't interested in wanting to pursue it, but they still came back to camp because they liked the camp experience, et cetera. Have you found that there is a particular age that once that they have learned something, that the hook has been set, so to speak, so that way that they now have the magic bug as opposed to in later years? Because it seems like that the older that that we as children get to into adulthood and you start to pursue different things, whether it's going to be soccer or paintball or basketball or whatever that their sport is or your interest might be of chess or something. And so you might try a bunch of things, and so that's fine. But it seems like that if you're younger, at least from what I understand, that let's say 8, 9, 10, 11 in that age group, that they tend to keep that one thing longer because that's the thing they keep going back to that they had learned. So has that been an experience that you've seen, that some of the younger kids who, when they start earlier, continue to come back as opposed to the older kids that don't come back? Or am I just making that up?
No, you're absolutely right. But I think it happens even with the kids that started younger. I think somewhere around 16 or 17, if they've been doing magic for a while, maybe even if they haven't, they tend to kind of lose focus. But I don't know if that's magic in particular or if that's just being 16, 17, 18,
sure.
and, you know, being all over the place. Because we have had kids and adults that have been doing magic and then they stop for whatever reason, but come back to it maybe mm-hmm. 5, maybe 10 years later. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it's still there. But, yeah, you know, priorities change, your living situations change, and, you know, sometimes you're just not able to
sure.
devote a week to coming up to a camp and learning magic.
So. Now, what about girls versus boys? I'm wondering if there are more girls getting interested now than there were when we were younger, or is that getting to be closer to 50-50, you think, or what?
Oh, gosh, no, not closer to 50-50, but there does seem to be more girls. So, again, when camp started, you know, if we had 100 campers, 90 of them were boys, 10 of them were girls.
Okay.
Then we got to the point where 20 were girls. You know, 80 were boys, 20 were girls.
Mm-hmm.
That's the highest. That's okay. the highest. We okay. never even came close to a 50-50 split.
I just wondered if there was something that in the younger group that's coming up next, if that's something that girls are getting interested in. But it sounds like to a degree that they are from what you've just said there.
Yeah.
You know, not to the point of 50-50 yet, but I'm wondering at some point whether there'd be some equality. I mean, there are a lot of competent, tremendous female magicians, and I'm just I'm anxious to see more of them, I guess, into
100%. 100%. Mm-hmm. Well, our special guest last summer was Suzanne.
Oh, she's wonderful.
And she was great. She and again, you know, it's the girls like seeing that. Ali Shelley was on our staff.
She's great. Yeah.
I'm forgetting. Rosemary Reed was actually mm-hmm. a camper. Now she's a working professional magician. But yeah, so you know, the women had. There were fewer of them, but they had sort of a higher profile because there were fewer of them. They were definitely more noticed.
Yeah. And were they treated differently? Did they have different classes they went to?
No. Okay. No. Everything was exactly the same except their cabin was,
sure.
you know, a girl cabin versus a boy. And the washrooms and shower rooms. Yeah. We had a girl washroom. But other than that, they were, you know, everybody was together all the time. That's part of the camp thing, though, you know, it's the boys and the girl, everybody is together. That's what makes it the camp. We mm-hmm. might split off and do our individual things, but really we act as one, as a camp. We do, you know, full camp show, we do things, we do, you know, reunions, we'll do camp fundraisers.
Yeah.
And it's all about us as a group as opposed to, you know, individuals.
Right. Well, as we start to wrap up over here, that you did say early on that this doesn't necessarily mean it's the end. There may be some other iteration in the future. So what do you think the next step will be?
I'm not really sure. I just, you know, hate to say goodbye
yeah.
to something like this. And you know, it's one of those things, you don't know what you got till it's gone. Now, you know, that the announcement was made, we've got so many people writing in saying, oh, we were planning to come this year, you know.
Sure.
That kind of thing. So, but just the goodwill that had been built up and the way the camp went, something just had to change. I think if we do it moving forward, we will hopefully be able to, you know, pay people for participation, perhaps, you know, run with another camp and just not have that really huge burden of running this whole thing ourselves. You know, that's kind of what took it away in the end was things like insurance, joining the camping association, the buses, all that other stuff.
All the logistics, right.
Yeah. The magic part, dealing with the magicians, that was a joy. It was all the other stuff that was just getting a little more, you know, and again, in this world, the way it's going, just a little more difficult, a lot more hoops to jump through, mm-hmm. and a lot less kind of fun.
I would think there are a lot of hoops to go through, particularly since you're crossing a foreign border between the U.S. and Canada as well.
And under 18.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
that's a very good point. Well, and so if somebody wanted to contact you to ask for more information or something, is there a website that's going to continue even after this or an email they
absolutely.
Can contact you for information?
Yep. So the website is, we've got so many, sorcerers-safari.com, but the easiest one is themagiccamp.com. themagiccamp.com. And from there, you'll see our staff. You'll have access to emails, phone numbers, all the camp videos. We have 20 years of amazing video, performers that you know that in situations you've never seen. definitely worth watching. And yeah, they can get everything just from that, themagiccamp.com.
That sounds great. And to wrap up here, the name of my podcast is called TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And so I would ask you then, Mike, what is your word or what is your phrase? What is it's important, your philosophy of life, if you will?
Let's make magic better. Let's, you know, if you see a young person anywhere doing magic, try and, you know, give them some advice. Let's try and push magic, you know, to become a real performance art in the public's eye, not just in ours, but in the public's eye, rather than just, you know, tricks and neat puzzles.
Sure.
Let's make it a real moving event. And the only way we're going to do that, sadly, if you're our age now, is by mentoring some younger people.
Right. Right. And just kind of being an encourager and empowering.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And giving, you know, the wisdom that you've gleaned over all these years, the stuff they cannot get from a book. They can't get from a YouTube video. They can get the technique, you know, the mechanics, but they can't get the art.
Right. Well, that's what goes back to the Magic Club meetings. I think a lot of people, a lot of kids in particular, young people, maybe even millennials, are really not joiners. They would just as soon stay home and watch their video or whatever. But again, you cannot get the kind of interaction that you actually need in order to progress, because magic is a performing art. Those are two words that are important, performing and art. You need to perform, and it is an art, and you just can't do it in front of the mirror or in front of a video camera that you post on YouTube. You need to have that interaction with other people. And I think that by going there and by being an older person, you need to, as you said then, Mike, to encourage and empower these people, the young people, so that way that they will become better magicians then too.
Yes, so. definitely.
Well said. Well, Mike, I want to thank you very much again for being my guest here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Scott. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Sure. Thanks very much for telling us about the Sorcerer's Safari and for the Magic Word Podcast. That was Mike Siegel, and this is Scotty out. Wow, that was a lot of fun, and I want to thank Mike Siegel for being our guest here on the Magic Word Podcast and talking about the Sorcerer's Safari. Despite his illness, it sounded like he was kind of stuffed up. I had to edit a little bit where he was coughing a little bit as he was talking, but you can just sense the excitement in his voice and how great of a camp counselor and an organizer he was and putting this whole thing together. He was very passionate about this project. And it sounds like from the times I've always spoken with Mike that he's always passionate about everything. And I'm sure he puts all that into every one of his performances then as well. That's something that you might consider whatever that you're doing your shows as well. And when you're talking with your clients and whomever, in order to try to keep that freshness as well as to try to keep that excitement and that tone. So this way that people want to be around you and to watch you and to listen to you. And as opposed, I know sometimes when I'm doing this podcast, I feel like I'm just kind of monotone, and I don't generate the kind of excitement within my voice I know that Mike does. So it was just great when I was going back and listening to the podcast a second or third time and editing this for you that I just continued to get even more out of it, and I hope that you did as well. Well, we've been running a contest for the past few weeks that it was a prize given by a recent guest, and that was from Danny Archer, and he had donated one of his ebooks called Danny Archer Goes Mental. And we've had a lot of people who have entered the contest, but unfortunately only one person can win. And even though we've had dozens and dozens of people who have signed up, again, only one name was drawn, and the name of that lucky person who is the winner of this week's contest is Pat Denenzo. Congratulations, Pat. Your ebook will be finding its way to you shortly. Compliments of Danny Archer. And again, I want to thank Danny Archer for offering this superb gift. Well, it's time to start to wrap up here, I believe, because we've got some other things that we're working on that right now for future weeks. And as I mentioned earlier in the podcasts over the last couple of weeks, that I'm going to be going to Las Vegas next week, and I've got several people already lined up that I'm going to be interviewing. So my Las Vegas Chronicle should be a lot of fun, and you'll be able to come along and join me on the fun and on the adventure as we go to the airport and take off and get to see some shows and see some people and go to their homes and have some great conversations. So come along for the ride. I know that you're going to be enjoying it. Next week's guest that I'm going to be releasing, however, is going to be one that I just did with David Hira. And he has just recently released a lecture through Penguin Magic, and it is superb. And there are several different reasons why that I would recommend this. And if you do have a chance to go over to Penguin Magic and download that, I would say go take a listen to that and watch it. It is one of the better lecturers. Certainly Penguin has just the finest, and I would say to go over and take a listen and to a watch of that lecture of David Hira's then as well. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and be a mentor. Let's make magic better. What do you say? This is Scotty out.